Welcome to the Speaker's Corner Show. The show is broadcast every Tuesday on 104.4 Resonance FM at 6:30 p.m. It's archived on speakerscorner.net, at least it will be updated very soon. And you can come down and join us at Speaker's Corner every Sunday afternoon between noon and dusk. Dusk obviously goes on a little bit longer than dusk in the winter. This week's show is an interview with Jonathan Klein. He's the editor of the socialist newspaper in Sweden called Socialisten, and it's a discussion about the history and present day circumstances in Sweden.
My name is Jonathan Klein, and I edit Socialisten.
What type of newspaper is that?
Socialisten is the Marxist voice of the labor movement in Sweden.
Sweden's very famous. One of the main reasons I was interested in interviewing you is Sweden's very famous as an alternative model between capitalism and socialism, and it was always presented in that way historically through the post-war period. What elements of Swedish society are positive in that respect? What elements are negative in that respect? And what is truth and what is myth about this?
Well, in the past, one could say that there was a kind of Swedish model which achieved a whole number of serious reforms, although it wasn't something in between socialism and capitalism. It was still capitalist society with quite a few reforms and relatively egalitarian. But in the past 25 years, that's really changed. In fact, the Swedish model which has been exported in the past period has been one of cuts rather than reforms. For example, delegations have gone to Germany to explain to German social democracy how to cut so much in such a short period of time as one's done in Sweden.
What type of cuts are you talking about?
In public sector. How to cut back the public sector to the extent which one has done in Sweden.
What sort of percentage of the economy is the public sector, and has that declined, or what's the new relationship that's been established then?
Well, I can't remember the exact figures. If you look at it in just in terms of taxation, then Sweden still ranks very highly. I think about 50% of GNP is taxation. But that's because one has a peculiar system in Sweden where one taxes everything, even things which are paid out from the state, like unemployment benefit, pensions, and things like that. So the actual, if you take away that, the actual figures are much less. In terms of employment by the state, if I remember correctly, I think it's about 15% or something like that, which is not a particularly high figure. In most things, one can find other European countries that have got things which are better in terms of the welfare state nowadays. I think probably the only thing where one can still clearly say that Sweden is better than other European countries, that there's no other country which has as good a condition, is in terms of childcare, nurseries. There's an extensive nursery system, and also parental leave is more developed than in other European countries. If you look in terms of unemployment benefit, health service, you will find other countries in Europe which have got a better system nowadays.
And once I read a figure about the amount of wealth concentration in Sweden, because that's one thing that seems to belie the idea about any Swedish model, perhaps ever existing, this idea that there's a relatively egalitarian wealth distribution. At the same time, there seems to be this extreme wealth concentration. Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, I don't know if it's true now since the collapse on the stock market, but a few years ago, it's basically one family which controlled 50% of the stock market in Sweden. It was the Wallenberg family. And then there's three or four more families that you put them together, you basically, they are in charge of the Swedish economy. So it's very monopolized, very centralized Swedish industry. And that was part of the policy of the Swedish social democracy during 50 years, is just to work together with big business and to concentrate industry. In terms of the distribution of income, Sweden is probably still one of the most egalitarian societies in the world. I think the last figure for the Gini coefficient I checked out, I compared Sweden, other countries, and Sweden was the most egalitarian, although Beijing was more egalitarian than Sweden. But that has also changed in the past 20, 25 years. Of the advanced countries, the countries where the class differences have increased the most, it's United States, Britain, and Sweden where differences have increased the most. Mm-hmm. Although from a more egalitarian base in Sweden than in the United States and Britain.
And these families who own such vast proportions of the total assets of the country, is it? Mm. How did they acquire their wealth?
Oh, they're old families.
From feudal times, you mean?
Or? No, from the end of the 19th century when industrialization began in Sweden. There's been very little change in Sweden.
And what was the nature of the process of industrialization? When was Sweden industrialized?
Well, it began at the end of the 19th century. In the 30s and 40s, Sweden did relatively well in the world, especially after the 40s, because Sweden came out of the Second World War with the whole production apparatus intact. So after the Second World War, there was a big jump forward for Sweden in the post-war boom, which laid the basis for all the reforms. Sweden had the industry, the raw materials which were needed on the world market. It had the apparatus intact, and there was an enormous economic development because of that.
Some social democratic thinkers from various documents or films that I've seen over the years, it implied that Sweden's alternative model was created by a program that began, or by the election of a government in the 1930s, during the time of the Depression. Is that right? And Sweden, I don't know what happened at that time. Can you give me an idea?
Well, there is a myth that Sweden began with kind of Keynesian politics in the 30s. In actual fact, very little of that was done. There was some done in the 30s, but not until really the 70s did one try any kind of deficit financing in any larger scale in Sweden. The state finances were very conservative during the 50s and the 60s, always tucking away money and not spending money. And it wasn't until the crisis hit in the 70s that one really started to attempt public spending as a means of getting out of the crisis. So it was a lot of talk in the 30s about that, but in practice it was completely insignificant.
From the people I've spoken to, I get the impression that there is not only a relatively egalitarian distribution of wealth, but that there is an egalitarian consciousness in the population. I don't know what sections, whether it's just some sections or other sections, but why would that exist, or if that is true?
Mm. Well, I think it is true that there's a general egalitarian feeling in Sweden. I think one can see it in many different things. It's something which is regularly condemned by the media as restricting individuals and pressing everybody down to the same level and that, but it's pretty deep-rooted. And it's rooted in the traditions of the struggle in the Swedish labor movement. In the past, the Swedish working class from, say, beginning of the 20th century until the end of the 40s, the Swedish working class was one of those militant working class in Europe. And then the reforms of the 50s and 60s and 70s to a certain extent were a result of the economic boom and that tradition. It wasn't just the economic boom, and it wasn't just a question of the previous struggle, it was a combination of the two of them which led to these very many reforms. And they had an egalitarian goal, these reforms too, very consciously so. And after so many years of first struggle and then less struggle but more reforms, it's quite deep-seated.
Okay, and has there ever been a revolutionary crisis in Sweden, like in some other European countries like Germany or France, in the last 100 or so years?
There's been a whole number of revolutionary crises. Probably the biggest revolutionary crisis was in 1917. Part of that was the split in the social democracy. The Swedish social democracy actually split before the October Revolution, whereas most European countries, the social democracy split. You know, the communist parties were formed after the revolution, after the October Revolution. In Sweden, it actually happened before that, because there was a big crisis then and a movement towards taking power in Sweden.
I understand Sweden's not been at war for a long time. How has that assisted perhaps the development of some stability within society?
Well, one has to see why Sweden has not been at war for a long period of time, and that is a direct result of the revolutionary struggle of the working class, dating back to 1905, when Norway wanted to become independent from Sweden, and the Swedish king and the Swedish bourgeoisie wanted to invade Norway in order to keep it under Swedish control. And it was the resistance of the Swedish working class and the unity of the Swedish working class with the Norwegians which prevented that. And the leadership of the right-wing leadership of the social democracy at the time made a kind of deal with the bourgeoisie that they would stop revolution if they wouldn't invade Norway. And that is the beginning of Swedish neutrality. During the First World War, there were very militant struggles in Sweden against participating in the war. The Swedish bourgeoisie is traditionally tied to Germany, and they wanted to go in on the side of Germany in the First World War. But there would have been a revolution in Sweden if that had been attempted. The left-wing leaders of the social democracy in Sweden were part of the extreme left of the Zimmerwald meeting of anti-war Marxists. They, together with Lenin and a few others, were the extreme left there. And they mobilized against participating in the war, and it came to a whole number of confrontations. But based upon that, the confidence and experience they gained in the struggle in 1905, they managed to keep Sweden out of the First World War. And then, since then, neutrality has rolled on. At least surface neutrality.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. The Nazis and the rulers of Sweden and the Second World War and Sweden. Can you give me a bit of an inkling about whether there was any relationship, and if so, what type of relationship existed?
Well, the Swedish Social Democratic government during the Second World War adapted itself to the Nazis in line with the traditions of the Swedish bourgeoisie of adapting itself to German imperialism. So German troops were allowed to pass through Sweden and the Swedish government handed over Norwegian resistance fighters that took shelter in Sweden to the Gestapo in Norway. They prepared lists of Jews in Sweden, which they were prepared to hand over to the Nazis in case they occupied the country, to show themselves willing. So it was a pretty terrible policy, which changed after Stalingrad. And then they began to, under the surface of neutrality, of course, the same neutrality as previously, they began to support the British and Americans, and that's been the policy ever since, where they had the military cooperation, secret military cooperation, and that with the United States during the neutral 50s and 60s.
What's the relationship then, the effect which the Cold War and the proximity of the Soviet Union, the conflict in Finland, how did these things affect the fate of Swedish society?
Well, although there was the surface neutrality, which actually went as far as that the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme in the early 70s protested against the Vietnam War, and the American ambassador left the country in anger, and all this kind of on the surface kind of radicalism. In actual fact, the closeness to the Soviet Union made Sweden into kind of almost kind of front state against communism underneath the surface. I think by the 60s, about 500,000 left-wingers were registered by the secret police in Sweden. I think in terms of proportion of the population, that's probably even more than the Stasi had had registered in East Germany. So there was enormous control apparatus within the labor movement. The social democracy had its own secret service. There was the state, the official state secret service, the military secret service, and then the social democracy had its own secret service to control communists within the labor movement. So in that sense, it's definitely affected the Swedish labor movement.
And how prevalent were the communists within Swedish society?
Not that prevalent. For most workers, I mean, they were social democrats because the social democratic government was in power and it was actually improving things. So that was good enough reason to support them. They didn't need to support the communists, Communist Party. The Communist Party hovered around 4% for decades. And that's the limit for getting into parliament. So there was always what was called Comrade 4% in Sweden. That is, social democrats would vote for the Communist Party just to make sure that it got into parliament, so there would be a continued left majority. But so the real support of the Communist Party was probably even lower than 4%.
In international policy, Sweden was well known, is well known for defending or protecting third world development. That's something that remains in my head as well. How much is that true, and how much has Sweden played perhaps an imperialist role, if at all? Can you give me some idea about that?
Well, the sort of international image of Swedish social democracy and Sweden has allowed it to place itself quite favorably in a number of positions, because they've supported the ANC in South Africa for a period of time. I think they managed to sell a whole number of Swedish fighter planes to South Africa in the last years, which they would not have been able to sell otherwise to South Africa. Also, they've managed to establish Swedish factories and that in all kinds of third world countries on the basis of them seeming better than others, but basically it's the same imperialist exploitation. One used to say that Sweden was a small but hungry imperialist nation.
Coming back to Norway, and Norway's political... there was a speaker a week or two ago at a Labour movement meeting in London, and he was speaking about various left-wing traditions in Norway. Today, is Norway's political system connected with Sweden, and what's the nature of the process taking place there? Is there some sort of big shift to the left taking place there, or what's happening?
Well, contrary to popular belief, the Scandinavian countries are actually very different. All of them are quite different from each other. But there has been a clear shift to the left in the Labour movement. One talks about the Trondheim model, where the unions went out and asked people, what do you want to actually do in the... what demands do you want to get put through in the elections? And they put together a program, and then they got the Social Democratic Party and the other left parties to agree to those things. And that then spread nationally and meant a shift to the left in the workers' parties. And that hasn't happened in Sweden.
You mentioned the Labour bureaucracy and that they had their own secret service and so on. They had, I presume, don't have now?
Well, the Swedish social democracy has lost so many members in the past 20 years. Hundreds of thousands have left social democracy and discussed the right-wing policies which have been put through. So I don't think, well, maybe they have it left, maybe they don't. In any case, it's quite irrelevant, really.
And the bureaucracy is not really strong enough to hinder the development of conflict by working people or trade unions, or is there still a very powerful bureaucracy?
The bureaucracy is still very powerful compared to most other countries. It is, although its authority has been very much undermined. There's no kind of automatic allegiance towards the leadership, but as there used to be in the past. But it is still very strong. It's in the sense that we've had a whole number of strikes in the last years, and where the leadership is strong enough to actually manage to get a worse deal after the strike than it was offered before the strike, and then force that upon the members involved.
Okay, the main political parties, as I understand it, there's a right-wing government in power now.
Yes.
What are the main political parties? Obviously, you've talked about social democracy, and what are their relative strengths, and what is the nature of the present government?
Well, the Swedish social democracy is still the absolute most important party of the working class and in Sweden altogether. In the opinion polls, they've been getting last period up to 45% of the vote. The unions are still completely dominated by social democrats at anything above the local level. Basically, it's completely dominated. There's very close connections between the unions and the social democracy, much closer than in most countries. And it's an idea. It's not just a practical connection today. It's a strong ideological idea that they should be connected, which is driven by the leadership of both the unions and the social democracy. So that's definitely the most important party. Then there's the Left Party, also, which has had its ups and downs, the ex-communist party. And they attract more support nowadays among women in public sector, for example, because they're strong in defending the public sector. They, among young people in the big towns especially, they get a lot of support. So that's the main parties on the left. Apart from that, you've got the main bourgeois party is the Moderates, which is basically the conservative party, and they call themselves the New Workers' Party nowadays, because they claim they are there for the interests of the working population. So they destroy things for everybody who isn't working, people unemployed or sick or pensioners or whatever, as long as they claim, well, we're supporting people for work. They make tax benefits for people who work. But of course, that puts a lot of pressure upon the working class. If you split the working class up into an underclass, who are those who happen to be unemployed for the moment or ill or whatever, and those who are actually in work for the moment, that weakens the working class as a whole. And that's their strategy, of course. That's the main bourgeois party. The other ones are just small bourgeois parties, you know, attract various elements, various layers of society, but they're not so significant, really.
And with the current international crisis of the capitalist system, how do you see the future developments in the intermediate term or short term in Sweden?
Well, I think there's been a definite change in attitudes, that for a long period of time the what was put forward in the media, and which people accepted, although they felt a kind of they didn't really like it, but well, what can one say, kind of thing, well, that the market has the solutions, and that is definitely breaking down now in the crisis, where the leaders of Swedish industry are complaining to the bourgeois government that they're not intervening enough in the economy. One investment bank has gone bust and was nationalized by the bourgeois government, and well, they're demanding more action. And that really represents an ideological sea change, which I think is very deep going. That's much more important, I think, than how many people more get unemployed or how many people get their wages lowered or something like that.
That was the Speaker's Corner show for this week. Thanks to Jonathan Klein from Socialisten newspaper in Sweden. You can come down to Speaker's Corner every Sunday afternoon and join us. That's Marble Arch, Speaker's Corner. Or you can tune in 104.4 Resonance FM every Tuesday afternoon at 6:30, or visit our website, speakerscorner.net.